Well, hello and welcome there to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including that source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So, without further ado, let's get started. We've got the mystery of the golden torcs from Yorkshire in England, and then map dowsing, or is it guesswork? There's a competition. A bashed-in skull seems to be the earliest evidence of human aggression, and anarchy in the UK, Sex Pistols drawings are seen as important as prehistoric art, are they? Ancient Indus bones show gender discrimination in death, and two large enclosures are found near Knowth in Ireland. Oatsy, the fabulous Iceman, may have smashed his eye in a fall, and that was the least of his worries. And menhirs, or spick standing stones, have been discovered in southwest India. We look at how humans adapted to Ice Age climate change, and across to Israel, where they're mapping the Mount of Olives necropolis. There's a Bronze Age hoard in Wiltshire, that's again in England, and bad news, an ancient Bulgarian settlement has been destroyed by bulldozers. Back in England again, and we've got news on early Bronze Age kist. Some amazing finds from inside there as well. And then heading up to the very north of Scotland, it's cold, but twigs, yes, twigs help identify a genuine Iron Age broch. Remember, you can be listening to all of this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. So let's start off today's podcast. The discovery of two golden torcs in the bed of a stream in Yorkshire in England is raising more questions than answers. Is that not always the way, of course? Who made them? How did they get there? Who did they belong to? And just how old are they? Well, the first question is probably the most intriguing one. They were found by metal detectorists almost a year apart in the bed of a stream near Towton. Now, Towton found fame back in 1461, or should I say infamy, as being one of the sites of the bloodiest battles of the Wars of the Roses, but not known for its Iron Age gold working. The torcs are in fact very similar to others found in Norfolk, the Snettisham hoard, so were probably made by the Iceni rather than the Brigantes, the tribe up there. The most logical explanation of their relocation to Towton was either via trade, plunder, or perhaps a gift. A gift is most likely solution, the clue being in their location, the bed of a stream having been washed there from a nearby site. Torcs of this quality were only worn by nobility or high-ranking tribal leaders. The first torc has been dated to between 100 to 70 BCE, with the other one believed to be a little bit older. Until this discovery, the most northerly find to date had been in Newark. I should say that was in England, of course, because let's not forget the Stirlingshire torcs in Bonnie, Scotland. It's a little bit more north. Anyway, not that I'm bitter. The tragic part of the story is we may not be able to learn any more about these artefacts, as they might be sold to a private collection. That is, unless they can raise the £60,000 to keep them and display them, as they are just now, in the Yorkshire Museum in York. All donations are welcome, and anyone interested can either visit the museum or go to the website at www.yorkshiremuseum.org.uk and donate. Now, dowsing or guesswork? I think I know which I'm going to go for, but dowsing has become a highly contentious form of finding archaeological features, with vehement supporters on both sides of the argument. Whilst not intending to prove or disprove its merits or detractions, the Megalithic Portal, a fabulous website dedicated to prehistoric archaeology, came up with a light-hearted competition for map dowsers. The competition involved map dowsing using nothing more sophisticated than a printed-out Google Earth aerial view overlaid with a grid. The map dowsers were then invited to locate A, a piece of rock art, and B, a quartz-striped boulder close to an actual site, either by using map dowsing techniques or the good old simple guesswork, but noting which method had been used. When submitting their entries, the dowsers were also invited to complete a questionnaire on how seriously they believe in this type of dowsing as well. The founder of the megalithic portal, Andy Burnham, admits that dowsing has created more discussions than any other topic. He goes on to say, "We always end up with the same stalemate. Dowsers claim they can find anything, and non-dowsers doubt that because there is just no documented proof." Well, I'm afraid if you were thinking of entering that competition, it's too late. Entries had to be submitted by Sunday the 20th of November. The results are, however, now in, with fabulously inconclusive results. But it's worth a look, so perhaps my guess is as good as a crystal. But pop along and have a look at what the results are and make your own mind up. A healed fracture discovered on an ancient skull from China may be the oldest documented evidence of violence between humans. The individual, who lived 150 to 200,000 years ago, suffered blunt force trauma to the right temple, possibly from being hit with a projectile. But the ancient hunter survived. The injury was completely healed by the time of their death. A skull was unearthed at the cave near Maba in southern China in 1958. Professor Trinkaus, who was part of an international team that re-examined the specimen, said the depressed fracture in the right temple region was the result of an impact that was very directed and very localized. Can we completely rule out a hunting accident? Well, no, but it's less likely to be that than being hit on the side of the head with a missile. When I say a missile, hopefully they mean a stone. Yet, Maba individual survived for months after the injury. It's another individual in a growing number of human fossils going back in excess of a million years who show long-term survival with serious injuries and congenital problems. This is where I'm finding it much more interesting. We have many more instances of trauma, sometimes serious, sometimes minor, but we also have a surprisingly high incidence of conditions that occur in the modern world, but are extremely rare. So the probability of finding them in our meager fossil record is extremely low. Researchers believe that such evidence points to the existence of care and support networks within these ancient human groups. The Maba individual was not a modern human, of course, but belonged to a poorly defined population of so-called archaic people living in East Asia at the same time as the Neanderthals were dominating Europe. Trinkaus thinks that the Neanderthals were the Western representative of this continuum, with Maba and other specimens representing an Eastern physical form. Lots in that report to try and understand. Now, as I said, anarchy in the UK. Yes, graffiti left by the Sex Pistols. An English punk rock band in the upper room of a rented two-storey 19th century house in Denmark Street, London, back in the 1970s, are pieces of art that merit comparison with prehistoric cave paintings. Well, so the archaeologists claim. Dr. John Schofield of the Department of Archaeology at the University of York said that they are worthy of being preserved as heritage pieces and should be preserved despite being offensive and rude. The markings discovered on the walls of the flat lend themselves to archaeological investigation as much as drawings made by early humans in the caves of Lascaux, he insists. It was even suggested that the intact pistols graffiti found behind cupboards in the property in central London, known as Tin Pan Alley, is a direct and powerful representation, radical and dramatic movement of rebellion. Researchers carried out a detailed analysis of the graffiti's content and cultural significance, concluding that while it could be considered rude, offensive and uncomfortable, certainly that was a point of punk, its presence confirms a flat as an important historical and archaeological site. The bulk of them are by John Lydon, or otherwise known as Johnny Rotten, and consist of eight cartoons depicting himself and other members of the band, as well as their manager, Malcolm McLaren, and other Pistols associates. Schofield described the site as anti-heritage because it goes against what agencies and heritage organisations usually wish to preserve. But he said, "We feel justified in sticking our tongues out at the heritage establishment and suggesting that punk's iconoclasm provides the context for conservation decision making." Well, this story has actually sort of prompted quite a lot of debate amongst archaeologists in Britain and abroad. Being an ex-punk myself, though, I'm a bit worried about becoming archaeology. So, jury's out on that one. Interesting story, though. A study of human bones from the ruins of Harappa in India has revealed signs of violence and challenged current thinking that the ancient Indus civilization was an exceptionally peaceful realm from its inhabitants. Harappa was among the largest and most populous cities in the Indus civilization between 2600 and 1900 BCE. The Indus civilization experienced a period of decline between 1900 and 1700 BCE, although exactly what caused this decline still remains unclear. American bioarchaeologist Gwen Robbins-Shugg has said that her analysis suggests that the women, children and individuals with visible infectious diseases were at high risk of facing actual physical violence. Robbins-Shugg studied the skeletal remains from 160 individuals from cemeteries of Harappa, excavated during the 20th century. The burial practices and injuries on the bones may be interpreted as evidence for social hierarchy, unequal power, uneven access to resources, and outright violence, she says. The violence was present in low frequency at Harappa, but it affected some communities more than others. The majority of head injuries appeared to be results of clubbings. The prevalence of such head injuries was about 6%, a low figure for an ancient state society. However, the distribution of the head injuries across the gender and class appeared striking. About half the female skeletons from one cemetery had severe head injuries caused likely by blows from clubs. In Area G, another pit of bones, 22% skeletons had acute head trauma, as well as chronic, highly visible infectious diseases. The individuals in Area G appeared marginalised, even in burial. They suffered the most extreme injuries and had the highest prevalence of disease, and they were interred just beyond a sewage drain. Area G also had skeletal remains of children similarly affected. Indian anthropologist Anik Ram Sakhiana said earlier research on the skeletal remains from the Indus cities had independently suggested that women had lower levels of nutrition than men as well. Bang goes the flowers in your hair concept of the Harappa. Now, the Brunaboyne Passage gravesites continue to surprise archaeologists. Oh, I'm surprised. With two large enclosures discovered near Knowth. The formation of one of them is unique in Ireland, leaving researchers mystified about how it might have been used. The two buried features were found in a field adjacent to Knowth, no more than 40 or 50 metres from the famous Passage Tomb. The place where they were surveying is near the core area where most tourists visit. There are virtually no bumps or irregularities on the surface, yet Professor George Egan of University College Dublin, who had conducted research at Knowth over the past 50 years, felt there was potential there because of earlier aerial surveys. Fenwick, who ran the geophysical project, searched below the ground using a magnetometer, a device that detects minute changes in the natural background magnetism of the earth caused by ground disturbances such as ditches, walls, and material which is perhaps being subjected to some sort of heat. He described his shock when not one but two large hidden features began to emerge. One is a large rectangular enclosure, in effect a soil platform some 65 metres wide and of as yet uncertain length. This is surrounded by a wide ditch of about 15 metres across. The second, an enclosure made of two concentric rings, was unknown in Ireland before. The outer ring is 70 metres across and has surrounding 3 to 4 metre ditches. The inner ring has its own ditch around it as well and is 25 to 30 metres across. These discoveries convince Mr. Fenwick that there are many more discoveries yet to be made. The scale of Knowth is much, much bigger than anyone previously realised, he said. The potential for further discoveries around Knowth is enormous. Knowth, along with its nearby Newgrange and Dowth Passage graves, are between 5,000 to 5,200 years old and are collectively a World Heritage Site. Now, Oatsy the Iceman, what is it going to be this week? A sharp incision in his right eye may have contributed to the rapid demise of Oatsy the Iceman, the famous mummy who died in the Italian Alps more than 5,000 years ago. New analysis has revealed that a deep cut likely led to heavy bleeding from the man's eye. The official opinion still remains that an arrow in his left shoulder was the cause of death for Otse, but the new study raises the possibility that he fell over after being shot by the arrow. Yes, I think I might fall over if I'd just been shot in the back with an arrow. But anyway, in one of these latest studies, the most advanced CT scanning technology available was used to take a closer look at Otse's right eye. Earlier examination had shown a crack in the skull at that spot. The new work revealed a deep incision in the same place. Scans also revealed iron crystals around the right eye and forehead, which produce a bluish hue. And since the region's rocks are naturally low in iron, they suspect that the iron was a sign of a hematoma, or massive bleeding, outside of the blood vessels. A biopsy is needed for confirmation of this, though. Albert Zink, head of the Jurak Institute for Mummies and the Iceman in Bolzano, was surprised and perplexed to hear these new claims. At a conference this autumn, he'd said a whole table full of experts discussed the evidence and unanimously agreed that the arrow is what killed the Iceman. The shoulder wound, he said, was still fresh and bleeding heavily when Otse died. The eye injury could have happened from a fall after Otse was shot, or perhaps from a blow to the head by his attackers. But whatever the cause, Zink is sure that it was secondary to the arrow strike. It may be true, he said, that there might be some new evidence that there is a little crack in the skin, so maybe he was bleeding from a skull trauma, but it doesn't change anything in the end. According to some news reports, the new findings could support a theory that Otse was the victim of a mountaineering accident. Both Reches and Zink agree that this was unlikely. Based on his muscle strength and patterns of joint degeneration, the X-Men was a fit, experienced climber, and he was actually on an easy path when he died. I think also the arrow sticking out of your back might give it away. Now to India, where menhirs from the megalithic Iron Age period have been discovered at several places in southern Karnataka. The discovery was made by Professor T. Murugeshi and his team, comprising of three scholars studying rock art. Due to their gigantic nature and height, they are known as Anakalu, or elephant stones, and even Rakasakal, or demon stones. I prefer that one. Menhirs have been found in Tamil Nadu, Andhra Pradesh, Kerala, and even northern Karnataka, but never before in the southern part of the state. Southern India is known for its megalithic culture, which saw burial sites marked with stone circles, kists, dolmens, and menhir standing stones. At Golarakatte, on the southern slopes of Chikaturupati, near Asarakere, the biggest menhir is 5 meters tall and made of granite. How do you not notice a 5 meter tall stone? Anyway, who am I to ask? The menhirs themselves are believed to date to between 1200 BCE to 800 BCE. Now, a team at Arizona State University and the University of Colorado, both in the USA, used complex computer modelling to analyse evidence of how human hunter-gatherers responded to dramatic changes during the last ice age. The researchers used the archaeological record to track human behavioural change in late Pleistocene, that's between 126,000 to 10,000 BP. Western Eurasia, over the period of about 100,000 years, and then across the equivalent of 1,500 generations of human hunter-gatherers. They applied computer modelling to determine the evolutionary consequences of cultural and biological change, which included how changes in the movement of modern humans and Neanderthals caused them to interact and perhaps interbreed with each other. The results showed that human ability during the environmental changes associated with the Ice Age increased over time, likely in response to these environmental changes. The modelling suggests the last Ice Age caused the ancestors of modern humans and Neanderthals to widen their range across Western Eurasia in search of new resources as the climate shifted. According to the study's co-author Julian Riel Salvatore of the University of Colorado, this provides new evidence that Neanderthals were more adaptable and resourceful than had previously been thought, and suggests Neanderthals were gradually absorbed within the expanding human, or I should say modern human, populations. And now a Jewish group in Jerusalem is using 21st century technology to map every tombstone in the ancient cemetery on the Mount of Olives, a sprawling necropolis of about 150,000 graves stretching back for, wait for it, 3 millennia. It's one of the oldest cemeteries in continuous use in the world. Jews began burying their dead on the hill, later became known as the Mount of Olives, about 3,000 years ago. The goal of the new mapping project is to photograph every grave, map it digitally, record every name and make the information available online. The project is mapping only the Jewish cemetery, which includes several burial monuments from the time of the Second Jewish Temple, which happened around 2,000 years ago. Around 40,000 graves have been mapped so far by the team, which began its work in 2008. They expect to finish recording all the intact gravestones, an estimated 100,000 in total, by the end of 2012. The other 50,000 are either unrecognisable or lie beneath later burials. The two mappers look at aerial photographs, consult handwritten burial records, and then walk along the rows of graves and digging carefully, careful now, through piles of dislocated tombstones. An interesting project I'd like to know a little bit more about. Now to Wiltshire, a cache of more than 100 copper alloy axes, that's bronze to you and I, chisels, sickles, gouges and tools have been unearthed in a field near Tisbury in southwest England. It's very unusual for a hoard of this significance to be on display in the regional museum before it's been assessed by the experts at the British Museum, so they're quite happy about that. Adrian Green, director of Salisbury and South Wiltshire Museum, found out about the hoard only 3 weeks ago when a metal detector reported a Bronze Age spearhead to the regional finds liaison officer. They were then able to get a team of archaeologists together to professionally excavate what turned out to be a rather large hoard. What was clear was that it wasn't buried in a pit or a hole that had been deliberately dug into the ground. It was actually in what appeared to be a scoop left by a tree when it fell over. The person who concealed it had taken advantage of a very natural hiding place. Well, that's another cracking example of how it should be done. The metal detectorist finds one spearhead, goes and gets hold of the finds liaison officer, and then they are able to actually excavate it properly. Brilliant news. Now, not so brilliant news, I'm afraid. An archaeological site in Bulgaria has been totally destroyed, including the remains of a village said to date back 8,000 years. This was done by bulldozers, allegedly the work of a construction company building part of a new road from Bulgaria to Greece. A special commission from the Ministry of Culture is inspecting the damage to the site near Momchilgrad, and police are investigating. Zarin Velchov, the chief inspector of the Bulgarian Ministry of Culture, said that the site had individual layers dating back thousands of years, believed to date back as far as 6,000 BCE. He said that he could not say who had committed the destruction, but it was most likely the company that was carrying out the work in the area. The construction company had been given an accurate map of the site, with archaeological sites clearly marked. The mound of the site, which also included a medieval church, were a few hundred metres from the planned road to Greece. Archaeologists now trying to rescue anything that remains after the bulldozing. Just a small point here, and this seems to be happening more and more. There have been reports this week of an Irish ring fort being bulldozed by a person filling in a pond who didn't realise what he'd done. And, of course, we always have the Pretty Circles demolition of a Neolithic site, part of a Neolithic site in England as well. When is this going to stop? Well, I'll try and cheer myself up with this news that an early Bronze Age burial kist containing cremated bones and material dating back 4,000 years has been excavated on Dartmoor, that's in Devon, England. Archaeologists uncovered items from the site on White Horse Hill, including a woven bag or basket, as well as amber beads. Dartmoor and National Park Authority said the discovery could be one of the most important archaeological finds in the last 100 years. Archaeologists uncovered cremated human bone and even burnt textile from a woven bag or basket with stitching on it. The receptacle contained shale disc beads, amber spherical beads and a circular textile band. All the items were taken to the Wiltshire Conservation Service laboratory for micro-excavation, which Dartmoor National Park Authority said revealed a wealth of information that does not normally survive. The peat and pollen surrounding the kist are due to be analysed and carbon dated to provide evidence of vegetation and climate at the time of the burial. And the items will be analysed to reveal just how they were made and what materials were used. This is the first excavation of a Dartmoor kist for nearly 100 years, although it's known that about 200 exist on the moor. The kist is to be rebuilt once analysis is concluded. And now finally to Bonnie Scotland, a radiocarbon dating of burnt twigs. Yes, burnt twigs found inside a broch at Clachtol in Assent, up in the Highlands of Scotland, suggests its interior remained untouched after it was built in the Iron Age. Brochs were often modified during later periods of use, and one at Nibster in Caithness had evidence of possible Pictish and even medieval occupation. The dating of the twigs, possibly used for woven mats, points to the Assent site remaining unaltered until it collapsed. Archaeologists involved in the community project called Life and Death in Assent's Past had expected the burnt wood to date from around 300 to 1000 CE. During the building's final phase of occupation. However, tests at AOC Archaeology's laboratories in Midlothian dated it to 111 BCE, suggesting generations of family left the interior unaltered from the time that it was created. I just call that messy housekeeping, actually. A spokesman for the project said, the possibility that we have a genuine Iron Age broch interior untrammelled by later modification of admixture is very exciting. I'm actually going to have to look up and find out what untrammelled means now, as well as admixture. Campaign for plain English and archaeology reports, please. Anyway, built of stone, these circular towers are called brochs. They're very impressive homes in some of Scotland's Iron Age communities. The broch at Clachtol was built using stones weighing up to 100 kilograms each. So on that weighty note, see what I did there? Do not forget that our news is now available on the iPhone, iPod Touch and iPad. So have a look at stonepages.com/app. You can, of course, go to the fabulous website of Past Horizons, where you will find everything you need to become an archaeologist. Yes, you will find world projects that you can get involved in, as well as the best tools to actually conduct your archaeology. Oh, with the happy smiling faces of myself and Maggie. And, of course, you're going to get daily news too. So, without further blatherings from me, can I wish you a very happy beginning of December? The run-up to Christmas is upon us. So, if you're wanting actually a lovely Christmas present, I know exactly where to go. Of course, you can always find more at Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. So thank you so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.